Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Then told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
A whole part of the show, man.
Welcome to Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock alongside Brandon Thurston. With you for the next hour as we are going to be going through new filings. And boy, do we have a lot to tackle. In fact, if I rewind 24 hours ago, Brandon, we were kind of scratching the surface of what were we going to discuss tonight?
I was ready to tell you, maybe this is one of the 2 weeks per year where I'm like, it's a slow news week. Let's just take the night off.
And then, you know what? The filings came down on Thursday. And what we got was an affidavit from Janelle Grant. And this essentially opened up a lot more details when it comes to the Janelle Grant case. There was, stuff that we had not, or at least had not been disclosed prior in any kind of public setting. So we're going to be going through all of that. And then we will be tackling some topics on later. But Brandon, this consumed most of your day, consumed all of my day going through all of this and putting a timeline together, but it's quite the extensive rundown from Janelle Grant's perspective that we have in this affidavit.
Yeah, we're getting it now because this is the continuation of litigation over whether the case will go to arbitration or not. It's been a long process. This case is now just over 2 years old, but there is some new information here from Janelle Grant. This is written, unlike all the other legal filings to this point, this is written by Janelle Grant in the first person, right? Mm-hmm. She's signing it. This is a sworn affidavit. And rereading the affidavit, which is an attachment to her opposition to the defendant's motions to compel arbitration, I really think this is, well, yes, it's a legal document. It's kind of, it's like what I imagine maybe a book written by her would look like, with some legal support. If she were ever to write a book about this part of her life, which is, this is a 40 page legal filing here.
Yeah. And I'm going to give everyone the warning ahead of time. Like, some of this is extremely graphic. It is descriptions of sexual assaults. It talks about suicide. So I think we should put the disclaimer out there in advance, because we will be going into a bunch of these different details. I mean, to take an overarching view, it is arguing that this NDA that was signed in January of 2022 was done under coercion, and Janelle Grant adding the fact she was not even aware of the arbitration clause that was in the NDA. Whether that is an argument that is going to hold up is for the judge to decide, but that is the argument here. And this affidavit is supported by a clinical psychologist as well that spent, 35 hours speaking with Janelle Grant over several months, and also filed like her conclusions and her findings, which essentially back up Grant's claims here of facing, post-traumatic stress disorder and being under coercive control of Vince McMahon.
Yes. It's a 62-page separate affidavit and separate declaration. There's a lot of mentioning by her of blacking out, by Grant, of blacking out, and in particular what this is related to about the specific legal issue. I mean, there's this story of hers and the allegations of misconduct against Vince and against people who allegedly enabled him, against John Laurinaitis, but there's it pertaining to the arbitration issue. She's raising all of these reasons why she shouldn't be, why the arbitration clause shouldn't be enforced. And one reason for that, that she's asserting here is because she doesn't even remember the arbitration clause being included as part of this NDA, which would force, if it's enforced, which would force this case out of public court and into a private mediation. So she's, she really has to contend with the notion that that part of the contract shouldn't be enforced, despite I don't think she's denying that she negotiated a deal that was going to be a $1 million deal into a $3 million deal, which is a point that the defendants will and have raised.
So, I mean, I had several takeaways from this before we kind of go into this with some of the specifics. It's certainly, I mean, it was already outlined as such in the complaint and the amended complaint, but hearing this in the first person, in particular of Vince McMahon, like, it really presents this as this kind of, it outlines like the power that he did have over Janelle Grant. And this is established right from the get-go, like in their first meeting of him, you know, coming in for a hug and stating, "I want to give you a life." I mean, this is more than just, "Hey, this is someone down on their luck. Can you meet with my friend and maybe you can help them with a job or some career advice?" This is someone that is like taking her under his wing and basically stating he's creating this job for her in legal at WWE. And then it's very quickly he's advancing this towards a sexual relationship. And that is how this begins. And it's just hearing a lot of Vince being quoted in this by Janelle Grant as well. The kind of language he is using, the kind of descriptions he is using, the type of just overall control when it comes to Janelle Grant's interactions with John Laurinaitis, with Brock Lesnar, which gets often very, very graphic. But it's all this pattern of Vince wanting to be alerted of all of it. And like that, Janelle Grant is this possession of his that he is getting his arousal out of.
Yes. And again, most of this was asserted in the complaint, which is the first filing that begins a lawsuit. But she's adding detail to her case. All of these allegations, by the way, all the allegations of misconduct, Vince McMahon has denied. John Laurinaitis, at least when it comes to abuse, has denied. We did reach out to everybody.
Yes.
Today, Vince's side, John Laurinaitis' attorney, W's representatives, even Brock Lesnar, got no responses from any of them. Just to try to get their point of view if they would offer any comment. Normally don't, but we tried. But yeah, it frames as Vince as somebody who's obsessed with controlling, Janelle Grant and offering her and wanting to monitor her, offering her to other men and having her involved with sexual acts with other men and wanting to like know what's going on with her interactions with Brock Lesnar and what kinds of pictures send me. You know, she's talking about him wanting her to send her the pictures that she's sending to Brock, which is already an arrangement that according to Grant is being set up by Vince as part of Lesnar's contract, of course. There's a lot of detail, I think, especially about Lesnar here.
Yes.
That has never been stated before.
Yeah. So let's go into this. I don't want to like rehash a lot of this, the details that we've already covered, but some important dates and figures for people. Their first meeting occurred on March 23rd of 2019. This is when Janelle Grant and Vince McMahon were living in the same condominium and Vince meeting with Janelle Grant. And that being when, you know, shortly after her parents had passed away and she was facing bankruptcy and was pretty much down on her luck at this point. And Vince willing to give her a spot in the company. And this leads to meeting with Brad Blum that first occurs on April the 1st of 2019. She's brought to WrestleMania that year, which was the show at MetLife Stadium. And later in the month, she's scheduled for a phone call with Brian Nurse, who was one of the four anonymized figures in the initial complaint that we had reported on at the time. He was WWE's general counsel, who would be let go later in 2020, which we will get to because there's an interesting aspect to that as well. And in this affidavit, she states that on May 11th, 2019, Vince told me that he had directed the general counsel to offer me a job. And when I expressed confusion about the conflict, because between his warning to me that no one can know about our closeness while his actions with the general counsel indicated otherwise, he replied that it's his company and he can do what he wants, including hiring who he wants and how he wants. So at the onset, Janelle Grant's presenting this this conflict of this relationship is beginning with Vince McMahon that she is being told to keep quiet and not tell anyone. But at the same time, it is Vince that is almost like bragging that he can do whatever he wants in his company, including bringing Janelle Grant in and creating a job in this, in the legal department for Grant. So it's already starting this, this sort of, this graying of the areas of personal and professional with Vince McMahon in relation to Janelle Grant. So the first executive that Vince identified as having knowledge of his sexual encounters with me, partly because he, quote, figured it out, was Brad Blum. And Brad Blum gets promoted to EVP of operations and chief of staff. And he also was one of those anonymized figures in the original lawsuit. Again, not defendants in the lawsuit, but they were originally the four figures that were not named, Brian Nurse being one of them, Brad Blum another. Vince then learned of the efforts when they wanted to reassign her to the XFL. This we had covered. Eventually, she is sent back to WWE because she was told WWE needed her more. But at this point, the rumors are starting to get out about Vince and Janelle Grant, and that was the idea of using the XFL as cover. Now we get to the summer of 2020, very big hiring by the company at that point, as this is months after the exits of Michelle Wilson and George Barrios as co-presidents, and after Frank Riddick III had been the interim president, they installed Nick Khan, who was announced as WWE's new president and chief revenue officer. And Janelle writes, or explains in this affidavit, in hindsight, I view Nick's arrival as the moment that my life changed for the worse. My fears about reporting the abuse were realized when I learned from Vince that he put the company's new president, essentially his second in command, on notice of his ongoing sexual conduct with me. Nick never asked me whether the relationship was consensual. Instead, Nick also waited for Vince to finish engaging with me sexually during meetings. And
to put that in context, elsewhere in the affidavit, she's saying that Vince would, she makes it sound as if Vince would take breaks in the middle of meetings to go have sex with Grant because they lived in the same apartment. I imagine he's having, it's in the middle of the pandemic. He's having meetings maybe from home by video call.
He's explained both of them are working from home during parts of the pandemic, and that, like, she describes it as he is acting on all of his sexual impulses and basically has Janelle Grant at his will at any points of the day.
And so what she's describing here is in, where she says, instead, Nick also waited for Vince to finish engaging with me sexually during meetings. I take what she's saying there is Vince would pause meetings, leave the meeting, leave other executives waiting, or at least leave the meeting and leave the rest of them to continue having the meeting while he went and had some kind of sexual encounter with Grant and then come back. But as if they couldn't finish the meeting until he came back, and he's the CEO. So that makes some sense.
So on November 18th, 2020, that's when Brian Nurse is let go and there's no replacement announced. And this becomes an issue. And Vince tells Janelle that people know about us. Sorry, let's go back here. So the deal with Brian Nurse being removed, it's written here that he was highly suspected or knew about Vince's sexual relationship with me, and he brought it to the attention of Vince's office during a meeting with Brad Blum. As a result, Vince then flicked his wrist and stated it was, quote, handled. I understood this to mean that the general counsel had identified Vince's conduct with me as a liability to the executive office and was subsequently terminated. So it sounds like Brian Nurse is as close to like a whistleblower as we have in this, in terms of his role that may, from Janelle Grant's perspective, lost his job because of bringing this to the forefront this knowledge of this.
This would be a revelation that Brian Nurse, who's the general counsel of WWE, which basically means he's the lead executive in charge of the legal team. He's fired, according to Grant, because, or at least that's the impression that Grant says she got, right? Is that Brian Nurse was fired because of his awareness of the relationship between Grant and Vince, and because he was willing to raise it in a meeting with Brad Blum.
Yeah, which is noteworthy because in March of 2021, so this is several months later, Vince tells Janelle that, quote, people know about us, and that he disclosed the relationship to Nick Khan and Brad Blum. Now, Janelle doesn't state this. Well, she does in the case. She says that Brad Blum was the first one to realize, but he figured it out. And she certainly implies that Nick Khan kind of understood this almost from the get-go. So I don't know if this March 9th, 2021 disclosure by Vince was new information to Nick Khan and Brad Blum, but it's maybe the first time that Vince is formally disclosing the relationship to them. And he said that Khan and Blum expressed concern, and one questioned whether I could be trusted. Vince told me he provided them with assurances about my loyalty, character, that I would never do something to hurt WWE, and that I would sooner jump off the balcony than hurt anyone. He told me that with these assurances, Nick and Brad were ultimately supportive. Now, it's also worth noting the fact how much is, like, when we're talking about the culture of protection around Vince McMahon, I would imagine that Nick and Brad Blum would be very much have their ear to the ground and understand the dynamic of what happened to Brian Nurse several months ago. I cannot imagine they were hearing about this relationship for the first time in March 2021. And I think they also knew that it would behoove them to be supportive of Vince's indiscretions here, even if it was going to be potentially very problematic for the company, even before we're talking about Janelle Grant's exit from the company.
And I would suggest to this day, if we're thinking about Nick Khan and Brad Blum, these are two people who've given the impression that they're very loyal to Vince. When Vince was out of the company, Brad Blum was out of the company. When Vince came back to the company, Brad Blum came back to the company. When Vince left the company and started a new company named 14th and I, who's in charge of it? Brad Blum's in charge of it. And Nick Khan, right after Vince made his comeback in January 2023, Nick Khan did that interview with Bill Simmons where he was, I would suggest he's very defensive. He was defending Vince and praising him. And really to this day, as recently as just several months ago on Stephanie McMahon's podcast, was talking about how he has nothing but respect for Vince.
So we'll continue on. And also then is the transfer of Janelle Grant from the legal department over to talent relations, where she is now working underneath John Laurinaitis. And Vince then disclosed as background that Johnny had been demoted from his role years ago due to having an indiscretion, which resulted in getting a woman under an NDA and $1 million out of Vince's own pocket. Vince added that Johnny, quote, owes him for that, and that they were waiting on Johnny's final sign-off on the plan to relocate me. I felt I had walked into a carefully laid trap when I learned Johnny was being given control over me to engage in the same sexual behaviors for which he had been demoted years earlier. This demotion in 2012, this had come out in the Wall Street Journal reporting of a demotion that coincided with this $1.5 million NDA that was attached to a former employee who had misconduct claims against John Laurinaitis. So that certainly adds up.
Yes. So we have, for people watching video, the infamous diagram of how many NDAs there are with how many individuals. And that is something that was, this is not new information. One of our big projects this afternoon for Jack Wanna and I was to figure out what is new information here and what is not. This is not new information. This had been reported by the Wall Street Journal back when the story broke a couple of years ago. But so that is an NDA that apparently was signed in 2012 for $1.5 million. Because of a relationship between Laurinaitis and a WWE employee.
And so this begins the schedule, for lack of a better term, that Janelle Grant is put on, where she is instructed by Vince McMahon to go to John Laurinaitis' hotel room that WWE was paying for to sexually serve myself to him as breakfast in her description. Weeks later, around the beginning of April, again, this is in 2021, I found myself in such immense emotional and physical pain that I attempted suicide. In June 2021...
That would be new information, I believe.
Yes, that that we... And we hear of multiple, you know, thoughts of suicide that she is outlining in this
afternoon. She has spoken recently in her appearances in Connecticut government buildings about her, I don't know if it's suicide attempts, but certainly her suicide ideation. There are references in the complaint, which was filed earlier, of suicidal ideation, but an actual suicide attempt has not been spelled out so clearly as this.
In June 2021, I was raped on a table by Vince and Johnny during work hours while colleagues worked on the other side of the door. I was left to clean up after my own rape. 1 month later, in July, Vince and Johnny sexually assaulted me while standing and sandwiched in between them. They forcefully pushed and pulled me and shoved their hands in my dress and up between my legs. The force caused stitches to pop on my dress and I subsequently blacked out. This is the same summer where Vince had Brad Blum get me from talent relations, walk me to the executive office, and wait on the other side of the chairman's door while Vince offered me sexually to a WWE talent. I later escorted this talent out of headquarters before any harm could happen. Throughout our entire relationship, Vince subjected me to physically violent sexual interactions with himself and others, causing both physical and mental trauma. So on the WWE talent side,
that is new information. This additional assault that she's referencing in July 2021 is new information. This rape on the table in the office in W headquarters has been alleged from the beginning.
Yes. So it's like Brock Lesnar's name is presented here. And the other talent, this is new information. She does not disclose who the name is, but it is revealed for the first time that there was another talent that Vince was directing Janelle Grant to get involved with sexually as well. So that is new information as well. For Brock Lesnar, this all starts in the summer of 2021. Of course, he returns at SummerSlam in August, but in July, after her transfer to talent relations, Vince told me that he had recruited Brock as our next playmate. In July 2021, I was directed to create personalized, explicit content for Brock, which I sent to Vince's cell phone. So again, Vince is the facilitator in this and constantly is wanting whatever material is sent to Brock to be sent to him, to report back to Vince. And Vince is also playing like in between here where he's telling Janelle that Brock, quote, likes what he sees. There was a plan.
He's head of creative here for this real life thing.
Yeah, in some
allegedly
very bizarre ways. Yes. There was a planned sexual encounter on July 21st, but Brock got too drunk. This story we had heard before. That night, Vince beat me mercilessly to, quote, prepare me for what sex would be like with Brock. And again, this is very graphic here. Among other things, Vince pinned me down, dragged me around, ripped out my hair, slapped me, and fisted me. Following this beating, Vince would not let me leave his apartment until I agreed that I was okay and not upset by the beating. I dealt with the physical, psychological, and emotional side effects of that beating for days afterward. And then he made a bet with Brock about who could physically rip me open the farthest. And I mean, this just gets like truly heinous here of what is alleged in this bet between Vince and Brock. They reach a deal with Brock and WWE. He returns in August at SummerSlam. And then several months pass. And by the end of the year, she is receiving texts. She gets a text at 4:29 p.m. This is on December 17th, 2021. Hi, this is Polish Joe, with a kiss emoji. I momentarily froze in confusion before Vince texted me at 4:30 p.m. that Brock, in brackets Polish Joe, is going to text you in a few minutes.
That's what it says.
I'm not making this up.
That's the pseudonym. Why is taken as true. Why is Brock Lesnar using a pseudonym to engage with Janelle Grant here?
Over text. I can't tell you that. I mean, it's, I understand this is all very, very heavy, content that we are going through. So for just a slight detour, the man's grammar, like he, the amount of two that was spelled incorrectly, like T O O, was alarming to me. But maybe, you know, you do give, some understanding that, grammar is not going to be his number one priority.
Yeah. I mean, does it suggest any awareness of guilt that he's in being involved in what Grant characterizes as sex trafficking? Then again, it could just be him trying to cover up infidelity if that's what's happening, if he sees it as consensual.
So I know that Brock is going to be heavily focused on with this. It's not like he comes off well in this affidavit. I think it is worth asking the question of what the communication was between Vince McMahon and Brock Lesnar. How, because this is presented as Vince is facilitating sexual trafficking of Janelle Grant. Is he informing Brock that, hey, Janelle Grant is really interested in you? He just, is Brock looking at this as just having a fling with a woman that is interested? Like, what is Vince saying to Brock in all of this?
I think it's important this is probably be jumping ahead a little, but it's important, I think, to point out that according to Grant, Brock clearly demonstrates his knowledge that Grant is a W employee, that Grant is not just Vince's girlfriend to him, but that she is employed by WWE as an employee.
Yes. And there is an issue when it is come up that he learns that she is working in talent relations and not legal. Now, they try to coordinate. To our knowledge, there is never an actual physical interaction with Janelle Grant and Brock Lesnar. But there is content that Janelle Grant is told to make for Brock that Brock requests as well. And she states, I now understood that this is at the end of the year. They're coordinating dates that Brock is at TV. There's the day one event in Atlanta on January 1st. And Brock is texting her, wanting her to travel to some of these destinations. And now Janelle is understanding that I would not only be expected to perform sexually for Brock, but I would also be expected to travel to other states to do so. I felt sick at this realization. I attempted to run interference before this progressed further by circling back to Vince with a message about my apprehension about this continuing, saying twice in one message alone that it felt wrong and ending the message with, I just need to say that. Vince's response was to instruct me to move forward with Brock, and a snowstorm prevented them from meeting on January 7th, 2022 in Uncasville, Connecticut. So 2 days after that, Vince meets with Grant, and Vince expressed to me that I not only had the company over a barrel, but now an anonymous source was actively leaking information about his sexual conduct with someone who has a presence in HQ.
Which she takes to be a reference to herself. That there's right. An anonymous source. Again, this is all translated through Grant's perspective, but according to her, Vince tells her, not so many words, somebody knows about us and is communicating that. I don't think she says to who, but that there's awareness about her about the relationship that they're having.
Vince said he believed that a resignation and signed paperwork would satisfy his wife enough to call off a divorce, protect his home, and protect us from public headlines. I expressed fear that this unknown source could weaponize my explicit content and cause me serious harm and public humiliation by publishing it, which again is outlined in here about Vince allegedly sharing a lot of these photos and videos with other people in WWE. At least that is what Vince told Janelle he had done. So Vince had an immediate answer to my question about who in WWE's legal department would see any paperwork related to me. Vince replied that no one would see it because these agreements do not go through the legal department. He said paperwork will go to K&L Gates, Jerry McDivitt's law firm, where it will be put into a dusty drawer along with, quote, the others. If that's not an ominous line.
Yes. And referring to others is the other NDAs, which
the other NDAs that nobody will ever know about and where a chart will never make its way onto a pro wrestling show.
And there's, besides Janelle Grant, there's 1, 2, 3, 4 that are in existence. Well, there are 4 that are in existence at that time. There are also allegations that by that time do not have NDAs associated with them, with in tanning salons in Florida and California, as well as Rhea Chatterton in 86.
So this several week period in January 2022 is the most consequential of the timeline, because this is when there is an enormous pressure on Vince McMahon that we know at least that Linda McMahon had gained knowledge of this. There is the threat of a divorce that Vince is conveying. And then there is the notice that they have to get, Vince says that his attorney had to inform the, and his attorney being Jerry McDivitt, had to inform the WWE audit committee that there was no pending or threatened litigation. I did not understand this because I had not threatened litigation, this being Janelle Grant against
and
Vince.
The audit committee is a committee made up of board members.
And that she had not threatened litigation against Vince or WWE. Vince stressed that I needed to sign this NDA by January 31st. He said he would be, quote, double fucked if I didn't sign the agreement, referring to a divorce and ousting from WWE. I interpreted Vince's words on the recording as an explicit threat of sign it or else on a deadline that backed me into a corner and made me understand I was not free to leave. During this whole time, she states, I continued to sexually engage with male talent at Vince's direction, including phone calls with Brock and another male talent with whom Vince had previously attempted to orchestrate a sexual encounter with months earlier. So she states that with all of this, and she sounds like she is under an inordinate amount of stress because of this, that she became suicidal and considered jumping to my death to avoid the hell my life was about to become. I signed the NDA on January 28th, 2022, to avoid the global public humiliation that Vince threatened. And she states, I have no memories of the arbitration clause. I do not remember discussing it with either Vince or my attorney. I do not recall reviewing it. I do not recall either McDivitt or my attorney making revisions to it. I was in an extreme state of distress, sleep deprivation, and fear throughout the entirety of the NDA period, including during the drafting of the arbitration provision. I do not recall agreeing to arbitrate. And then February 4th, just days later, she is wired the first $1 million with additional payments of $500,000 that were set up into installments.
So this allegation, I would say, is new, that she has I have no memories of the arbitration clause. I do not remember discussing it with either Vince or my attorney. Again, this is really important because the arbitration issue is the deciding factor about whether or not this goes away into private arbitration or it stays as a public case that the public can observe. I suppose the defense might say, and they will have a chance to reply in about a month and a half. That's their deadline to do so anyway. Why didn't you assert this from the very beginning when you probably should have anticipated that arbitration was going to be something that the defense would likely try to compel? Why not say from the very beginning, I do not remember anything about arbitration being discussed?
Yes. In that front, and at this time, Janelle Grant is being represented by Jonathan Shapiro. That's
Jonathan M. Shapiro, not Jonathan, to be confused, Jonathan L. Shapiro, who has been at one time was one of Vince's attorneys in this case.
That's right. So the NDA is signed January 28th. The payment comes February 4th. 10 days later, February 14th, Vince gifted me a large flower bouquet and scripted a moment on that night's live episode of Raw involving a talent that Vince had encouraged me to have sex with. The next day, Vince followed up and texted, "Why don't you congratulate him?" I told Vince I was confused about the scope of the NDA, particularly regarding who I was allowed to talk to.
Right. And this is really important too, because now we're talking more than 2 weeks after the NDA has been executed. And I believe there's language, we've of course gone over this many times, but I believe there's language in the contract that it could be construed that this is an NDA that's backward looking. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you could effectively sign an NDA that says evermore in the future about any incidents that happen in the future. You can't talk about it. I don't know. But there is language in it that seems to refer to the past tense. I can try to pull up the NDA while we're talking. But now you've got
realistically, like January 28th, 2022, like that should have been D-Day. Like there is, like if you're Jerry McDivitt, you are telling your client, Vince McMahon, you do not even think about this woman again. We have got this signature. You have nearly put us into boiling water with this as well. You have mixed your business with this affair on the side, and we are just going to sign this away, and you just do not have any interaction with her now.
And McDivitt, I put piecing together what we have in the public record when it comes to the appeals case, the appeal case that stemmed from the criminal investigation, which no charges were ever filed, where the appeals court agreed with the lower court in saying that no, McDivitt and Vince in this particular instance regarding this particular subpoena that's related to this case, they don't get to exercise attorney-client privilege here because there was probable cause, I believe it is the standard, that they engaged in crime fraud. Anyway, I think for McDivitt, I mean, of course, there's this other NDA relatively recently, although the allegation with the WWE talent who alleges misconduct against Vince from 2005, that WWE talent's NDA was signed in 2018. So that is, although the incident occurred many years prior, at that time, it's 2022, the NDA had been signed in 2018, and it's a $7.5 million NDA. And it's unclear to say the least without looking it up, whether the board was, you know, properly informed about the negotiation of that NDA. And it seems to me that McDivitt is sort of saying, we're not doing this again. You're going to have to get this done in time. So that I can be honest with the board about what's going on here. So it's really important that this NDA gets signed by the end of the month or by January 28th so that he can go back to the board and be truthful with the board.
Now, there is still contact between Vince and Janelle Grant after the NDA. We mentioned this Valentine's Day issue, and that Brock continued to contact her all the way until March 27th, 2022, 2 months after the NDA was signed. And Vince was still like pushing her toward meeting up with Brock after a Madison Square Garden show at the beginning of March. So we're still like over a month removed from the NDA being signed, and he is still trying to facilitate Brock and Janelle Grant meeting up together.
And this date is also really important too, because she's alleging Brock continued to contact me through March 27th, 2022, 2 months after the NDA was signed. And grants you, I think she's alleging that that's part of the sex trafficking scheme that she claims that Vince was involved in, that Lesnar was a beneficiary of. He allegedly got images, even if they didn't meet in person. They had these interactions, and they were, according to Grant, trading images and texting each other. I don't think we mentioned in here that there's, you know, Grant claims that Brock was sending her pictures of his genitals. So this was not just a case, according to Grant, of Grant sending him material.
This is both are like Brock is actively engaging in this. Now, is like you would have to see, like, did Brock believe that this was a non-consensual arrangement made by Vince McMahon? I mean, I think like there is a gap here, and I'm not trying to just, defend here, but I think there is a big gap here of like, what exactly was this Vince McMahon and Brock Lesnar relationship? We are only hearing from Vince's side here of what he's telling Janelle Grant, and what is he being transparent? Is it, like, what was Brock's awareness of this? Like there is a difference between something that can be very seedy versus something that is classified as, that you are going to be potentially like the fact is Brock is not a defendant in this case that we should also make clear as well here, but it is certainly a symptom of this coercive relationship that Janelle Grant viewed as this being a task that she was being put up to by Vince McMahon to facilitate Brock.
I suppose Lesnar could have believed that this was consensual. I believe that Vince and Lesnar all believe that this is consensual. Grant says it's not consensual. Whether or not Lesnar views it as sex trafficking, and I'm sure Vince does not view it as sex trafficking, I guess a different thing. According to Grant, this is a commercial sex act that Vince is, against Grant's will, giving sexual favors that he's extracting from Grant to give to Lesnar. What I wanted to get to here, this March 27th date is very important because she's alleging that the sex trafficking continues after March 3rd. March 3rd is a very important date because the date that the Ending Forced Arbitration Act was signed into law, that is not a retroactive act, which prevents arbitration from being enforced in cases like this where sexual misconduct is alleged. If she can convince the judge that this was part of the sex trafficking, she might be able to avoid arbitration because of that.
Also, that last week of March is also the week that the board is tipped off. That's the week they receive the notice from the friend of Janelle Grant about this that kind of gets all of this rolling. At least that's when the board is alerted.
Yes.
So there is also this filing from Dr. Chitra Raghavan. She's a licensed clinical psychologist that evaluated Janelle Grant for over 30 hours between May and August of 2024. She reviewed 81,000 texts, emails, videos, and photographs provided
before
by
Grant.
Before we
get to that, because I think we're probably done talking about Brock for the moment. We do have a Super Chat question that asks, any chance this puts the Obafemi versus Brock Lesnar match at WrestleMania in doubt?
I mean, it's
I think it's very unlikely.
My gut says no, that it is not going to affect that. But it does tell you just the sheer confidence that they had that we're getting not one, but two Vince McMahon references on television this past week, not by both by Cody Rhodes and then an inference by Paul Heyman on Raw. That, I mean, just the timing of it all, this does, I think, force people to at least once again confront this. I do not think this is going to affect the match, but I think it is going to, like, Brock kind of, he came back. There was the expected backlash that it would receive online, but like in a lot of these cases over time, people just kind of get worn out by that and he just assimilated him back. And this does force, I think, people to at least re-examine this case and Brock's role in it as well.
Do you know who's inducting Stephanie McMahon yet into the Hall of Fame?
I'm not expecting any thank you, Vince chants to begin by Stephanie, but the idea of that crowd chanting thank you, Vince, I mean, all bets are off. I don't know. Do we get a thank you, Vince, from Stephanie during the speech?
I mean, Paul acknowledged him in his speech. Was that last year?
Last year? 2 years ago? Yeah.
Any case, there has to be some allusion to Vince. I mean, he's her father, and he's been, I would be surprised if he's totally ignored.
Well, if people have more questions, you're welcome to send any in, but we won't go as much into this because this doctor had reviewed, 81,000 texts, emails, and videos and photographs provided by Grant and those produced by the DOJ. The doctor states, quote, I do not make any definitive conclusions regarding legal causation of harm, past or present, and do not opine whether the alleged abuse occurred. Rather, I opine on the psychological likelihood and expected nature of harm arising from the pattern of alleged abuse. It's my professional and expert opinion, to a reasonable degree of psychological certainty, that Ms. Grant's description and allegations of abuse by defendant Vince McMahon throughout their 3-year relationship are consistent with a pattern of severe coercive control, including the time during and after Ms. Grant executed the NDA. This alleged coercive control likely produced conditions of extreme duress that my clinical opinion would be expected to significantly compromise Ms. Grant's cognitive and emotional ability to engage in informed, autonomous decision-making during the period in which the NDA was negotiated and executed. And defendant McMahon writes about Oh, sorry. These are just some other notes. That's their conclusion right there. So, I mean, it is backing up the assertion here that she was under this control and really not of any, you know, sound state of mind to be negotiating or entering into this non-disclosure agreement. Again, this is going right.
From a legal standard perspective, I think there's unconscionability is a legal standard that you have to convince a court of to invalidate an arbitration agreement. And that's part of what the grand side is trying to establish there, is that she could not consent to this, not only all the other things, but she could not consent to she could not consent to this contract and could not consent to this arbitration clause. Therefore, arbitration should not be enforced.
So, I mean, there was a lot here to go through. Again, I was somewhat taken aback by how many new details we got that emerged out of this. And at the very least, I think it is, you know, an understanding of just, you know, re-engaging with this case that is, you know, it still is going to hold a lot of impact for this company. And I mean, beyond Vince McMahon, I mean, like, does this paint it any differently, Brandon, about sort of the WWE aspect to all of this? We didn't even get into this detail that on the exit for Janelle Grant from WWE, that, you know, Nick Khan sounds like he was the one enlisted with finding Janelle Grant a new placement at, they state, either an NBC or an ESPN using his media contacts there. It seemed like he was going to be the one to have Janelle Grant have a place to land after WWE.
Yeah. I mean, she's really going after Nick here, which I think is, you can say, okay, there's these horrible allegations against Vince. He's gone. Still owns a lot of the company. He owns a relatively big piece of the company, but he doesn't have control. He's gone. Brad is gone. Lesnar is still around, but, well, he's not an executive. But she's alleging that Nick was really an enabler of Vince and had awareness, at least, of the relationship, and was willing to support Vince in this objective to, you know, smoothly get Grant out of the company.
Did you have any different thoughts on Brian Nurse's role in all of this? Because he was more of, I would say, an unknown of some of these figures. Like, we didn't really know too many details about what role he played in this. And at least from this affidavit, it certainly does suggest that Nurse had his concerns, whether they were concerned for Janelle Grant or just the legal liability of the company. And it's Janelle Grant's reading here that this might have ultimately cost him his job.
Yeah, I mean, it's consistent with what she had alleged earlier, that there was clearly some tension and some awareness that Nurse had about the relationship, and he was uncomfortable with it. And this just adds greater clarity to that.
Yeah, and I mean, I find it very damning because, you know, when you have such concentrated power that Vince McMahon did in this pre-TKO company,
I would suggest real quick, if I could interject, I would suggest that Brian Nurse may have a legal case as far as maybe there's most states have a whistleblower act. If Grant's account is true, then he would have a whistleblower case, that being he was retaliated against for you know, pushing back against alleged wrongdoing.
Yeah, absolutely. That you could certainly make the argument, had he turned a blind eye to that, he would be absolutely acting in the worst interest of the company and against what his primary function should be to do, of protecting the company from this like potential litigation and what was being bred here. But again, if this is the example that our top legal counsel could lose his job over calling attention to this, I mean, you can call them yes men, you can call them enablers, but you're dictating from the top down that you run afoul of Vince McMahon, you are putting your position at risk. And that is, like, Vince McMahon was largely untouchable at this period. He was the largest stakeholder in the company. He had all of the voting control. And if you're an executive that want, like, They say that Brad and Nick were ultimately supportive of this relationship. They had no other choice but to be supportive of this relationship. And I'm not saying that that excuses it, but like that is the culture that is being painted here of one figure that had all of this control and had an example here of Brian Nurse that may have in fact lost his job because he decided to voice this big red flag that was emerging with Janelle Grant in this company that, remember, they wanted to elevate her to like well high up in talent relations to the point that they're like, we cannot just elevate her salary to that amount. It's too big of a sign to do this.
Draw attention. Yeah.
Like people knew it, but they were powerless when it's Vince McMahon that is the one that is dictating this.
I mean, like, taking Grant's account as true. I mean, this is kind of natural selection, like many other things in corporate life, right? Like the people who are willing to go along with certain things end up being the people who are in certain spots. I mean, just focus on Nick Khan again. Like, does this? He is still the highest ranking executive in WWE. Of course, there is Mark Shapiro and Ari Emanuel above him, who are TKO executives. And we do have the history of him bringing in Jamie Horowitz into WWE after Jamie Horowitz had been fired from Fox after sexual harassment allegations. Even after all of this has happened, but before the lawsuit filed by Grant itself had been filed, literally weeks before, he hires Lee Fitting after Lee Fitting allegedly left ESPN amid sexual harassment allegations. There's the story around Fox that I've pulled up the article here related to Charlie Dixon and Jamie Horowitz, where it says, what about Nick Khan? Nick Khan encouraged Julie Stewart Binks to ditch her existing agent for CAA, which is where Nick Khan worked at the time, to get on the same team as Charlie Dixon and Jamie Horowitz. And she alleges misconduct against Charlie Dixon and Jamie Horowitz, who were Fox executives at the time. This is the person who's in charge of WWE today.
It is. And if you're going to go based off of his public comments, like, this is somebody that has greatly downplayed the allegations against Vince McMahon, that stated that, you know, Vince went away. People like that when people do that type of thing. And I always knew he was going to come back. I have nothing but respect for him. And I, you know, just it's certainly you judge this from the outside looking in. And is this a company that seems all that serious about this? A company that, I mean, was in one of, like,
I mean, about Lee Fitting in particular, who is essentially taken over many of Kevin Dunn's duties. He's in a very powerful role. It'd be one thing to hire Lee Fitting into a lesser role, but he has been hired into, I don't know, you could say arguably, would you say that maybe that is the number four job in all of WWE after Nick, after Paul, maybe somebody else?
Yeah, like he's within that echelon.
Yeah, so this is somebody who's been hired into a very powerful position, not just giving him a job, not saying people should never be able to work again, but he's been put into a quite powerful position by Nick.
So beyond that, you know, you and Jack Wannon have put together a great story on the site that you can further read about this. But I think we have covered a lot of the most important details about all of this and where this goes. Again, we had reached out to all parties here. I do not suspect that there is going to be any addressing or response about this from McMahon's counsel. But if there is, we will certainly update that fact. It certainly does, you know, it. Janelle Grant is continuing to, you know, this more so in a legal setting, but, you know, we have seen a bit more of a public profile from Janelle Grant, and it makes you wonder about what are going to be her next steps.
Yeah, I think publicly. In a legal, I think it's very important that it's notable that the comments that she has made publicly to date are in a legal setting, in legal filings, where there is a privilege against defamation in a government building where she's raising awareness about litigation or advocating for litigation regarding NDAs, that these are two areas where these are privileged areas that it's harder, I think, to litigate defamation as opposed to just doing a public interview somewhere.
Reddit sentiment analysis.
And then from there.
So WrestleNomics has been busy inside HQ pouring through Reddit an analysis of more than 600,000 comments from 2025 and more than 5.7 million comments across a timeline of just over 7 years have been poured through. I would ask if this is just self-induced torture, but Brandon, you have been able to craft a attitude, a analysis of sentiment towards WWE and AEW, and all thanks to Leon White.
Leon White did it for us here. He did the Vader bomb on the data and said, here's the answer. We did this last year. You may remember.
Very popular last year.
So I just did an annual iteration of it, just tacking on the 2025 data. We've only got data up to December 31st, 2025. So this does not bring us into 2026, even though we're a quarter in. These files are very big. And there's this site called Academic Torrents, which is what is apparently scraping like all of Reddit, including all the subreddits, including the subreddit called Squared Circle, which is the most popular wrestling related subreddit. There are monthly installments, but I have to download like all of Reddit and each month to do this even more, at an even more granular level, at an even more monthly level or something like that. So I'm not doing that. But we did do this for the new year. And the big takeaway here is, so if just flash back to where we were last year, the big long story, I've done this sort of beginning late 2018 up to the present. And the story at the end of last year that were at the end of 2024 was that, the sentiment around AEW among these smart marks is really positive until you get to July of 2022. What happened in July of 2022? Anything memorable in wrestling history happened in that month?
I believe that was our powder keg that was about to explode at a certain press conference within the month.
It peaked then for AEW. And then it starts to turn down, in September 2022 also. And that's where Brawl In happened. Brawl out happens 2022. This is the big press conference and all that, blah, blah. So
this is both basically coincides. This is Brawl Out, and it's pretty much the pseudo retirement of Vince McMahon as well.
Right. And it gets down to the point where, in 2023 and going forward, it's basically a sentiment tie. It's all positive, by the way, nothing but positivity. At least that's how it averages out. But it's a sentiment tie for WWE and AEW. Of course, the volume for WWE is always higher. But it's basically tied from the middle of 2023 until March of 2025. I think it coinciding with last year's WrestleMania. And this confirms my intuitions, right? Is that, WrestleMania last year was kind of a turning point for the sentiment around WWE. And we see WWE going slightly down from that point forward, and boom, AEW going in the opposite direction. Now they're not back up to where they were in the glory days of CM Punk, but they're moving in a positive direction in terms of sentiment. What does this mean? The internet fans have spoken. They've decided we could close the book on this matter, right? Just believe the internet fans.
Done, right?
No debates here.
No further debate. Now, when people are looking at this, Brandon, why don't you explain how Vader works? Because this is not the case of just you're searching like Google searches where, okay, you're finding that people are talking about AEW, but what are they saying about AEW? This accounts for that, correct? Like, this is finding out, are these positive comments? Are these negative comments? This is not just strictly volume of times AEW or WWE are being uttered on Reddit.
No. So we're dealing with in the new year of 2025, I was able to designate 600,000 comments. That is, this is a comment, and I separated WWE and AEW, and I made them mutually exclusive, and I selected arbitrarily, but I selected comments that I considered keywords that I said these are AEW keywords and these are WWE keywords. And if I've got a comment that only has keywords from one of those groups and no keywords from the other group, then that's a AEW comment or a W comment. The keywords or things for AEW, like AEW, All Elite Wrestling, Dynamite, Collision, Rampage, Double or Nothing, All Out, All In, Forbidden Door, Tony Khan. And the WWE keywords were WWE Raw, SmackDown, NXT, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, Triple H, Levesque, Nick Khan, Triple H, HHH, McMahon, Vince McMahon. Okay. And so I selected those. And you do this Vader sentiment analysis, which is a Python library that goes through every single word in the comment and does a compound formula based on different sentiment values it gives to each word, and then decides how positive or negative that individual comment was. And we just run that across the entire timeline, across a large data set. And my answer to should we take this seriously or not, wrestling fans online, the hardcore wrestling fans online are some of the most dismissed people on the planet Earth. But so let's even take that as true. I think the trajectory of this is meaningful, that regardless of whether you agree with them or not, the direction of their sentiment is suggestive of something. And in 2025 and into 2026, we are seeing some positive trends. We're seeing at least less negative trends. We're seeing much more entirely negative trends when it comes to attendance and TV ratings for AEW that are complicated for reasons we don't need to get into right now. But we are seeing some, for example, attendance for Dynamite is up year over year in the quarter that finished the other day. TV ratings year over year for both Dynamite and Collision are up. Not in the demo. Demo's still down severely for everybody, but total viewership is up. So it's there are some positive data stories for AEW to tell following years where there were no positive data stories in the same categories.
Well, I hope this maybe this will get a mention on a future broadcast. I'm sure they will this will be right up there with their awards that they won at Sports Illustrated. Our sentiment is up.
Our average sentiment is now a 0.204 at the end of 2025.
I think next year you have to use wrestling executives and top stars. That will get you aggregated everywhere. What are the sentiments towards, I don't know.
Yeah, and as we discussed last year, I didn't include any wrestlers in here because that lends itself to like heel and face dynamics. And I think that would confuse things.
Wrestling executives, maybe.
They're in here. Tony Khan's in here.
Okay.
Levesque is in here. McMahon is in here. McMahon was an executive for a large part of this timeline. Nick Khan is in here.
Well, WrestleMania 42 is not a search term in there, but
WrestleMania is.
Last year, I mean, that was a bit of a turning point for WWE. This year, we have our latest numbers from WrestleTix. So night one is now at 38,381. Night two, 40,003. So if we compare this to this exact same week last year, same venues, same event, they are down 19% from last year's pace. They have 2.5 weeks, just under that, until WrestleMania, both nights at Allegiant Stadium. I have no doubt that this number is going to expand over the coming weeks. The question will be, what are these tickets going to be going for? And of course, these numbers, yes, they're down 19%. It would be ideal if we knew, like, what is the value of these figures, even down 19% in numbers, but what is the difference they're making up with how much more these tickets are going for? This is going to be a hugely financial success for the company. But if we are contrasting this to a year ago, and what are they being paid in Vegas to come back? What are the expectations of them hitting if it was to outdo last year? That's kind of, it's different levels of success markers that they're trying to hit.
I haven't looked at. I have all the tickets distributed data points going back and all the instances of them. But what I don't have, and I wonder if WrestleTix, there are previous WrestleTix tweets or Patreon posts that indicate, as WrestleTix does here, the cheapest ticket available. That could be meaningful in telling us. I mean, right now, Sunday's cheapest ticket available as of yesterday was $228. Was it higher last year? That helps give us some sense of what the gate is going to be like or what the average ticket price is going to be like.
Yeah, I think a year ago, the secondary market was going for like over 300. But again, that's the secondary market as well. I would think that prices will probably slowly trickle down in these next couple of weeks. They've kind of pulled their last promotional tool with the addition of John Cena. How much John Cena hosting a show is going to mean for ticket sales, we will see. But the card is pretty much done at this point, and now it is just going to be people that are, whether they're in Vegas and opt at the end to go. I think you've probably figured out your traveling audience. That is,
I've heard that you can. Well, I think did we talk about this on a previous episode? You can watch WrestleMania at a bar.
They have relaxed
in Las Vegas.
The blackouts. Yes, I literally got a because I think I ended up on all these mailing lists after contacting all these places that now I get their updates. And one of them even said the blackout has been lifted. I mean, they just flat out in their promotional material were advertising this that now we're allowed. So, yes, if you are in Vegas, you don't have to go to Allegiant Stadium to watch WrestleMania. All in ticket sales for Wembley Stadium are at 21,896. So it's largely, you know, it came out of the gate. It was at around 19,000 plus, and they have since moved up. They're almost at 22, but it would seem it's going to be a bit of a haul to try and attract the audience of 2 years ago, which WrestleTix finished at almost 54,000. That seems like that's going to be a pretty ambitious one. I thought there was a realistic shot of being able to match that, but we will see. They have 5 months to go until this show, but I think your immediate number out of the gate was probably under expectations.
Will this surpass All in Texas, which was in WrestleTix numbers? Was that 27? I'm looking it up. 27,245.
I think it should exceed 27,000. Now, if they let's throw out a number, okay? 30,000, okay? They get to 35,000 inside Wembley Stadium. Is that is this a worthwhile event to commit to Wembley Stadium if you have the option? Like, this is a giant stadium, and we've seen the precedent. Like, WWE, famously, they left Allegiant Stadium and they just went to the smaller arena.
It seems like Tony Khan is fixated on certain traditions that I think in this case are not going to serve them well by doing this in Wembley year after year. I think this would be a bit better served toured around the country or the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that this is one I don't foresee them. Like, I think they will be committed to this, but it's going to have to be a really, really big push that they make, I think, just to hit that 2024 number. And I think that would be your absolute, you could not expect much above that if that's your high target to try and attract. All right, let's finish off here with a few. Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling has announced a deal with TSN here in Canada, which is also the broadcaster of AEW. And if you watched the ROH and Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling Global Wars event last Friday, there was Tony Khan in Windsor, Ontario, side by side with Scott D'Amore. And it does seem like the two entities will be working together. Now, I have been trying to get more details on this deal, but they're going to be
doing the AAV. How much is it AAV?
I've not gotten that figure, but that's a big question. Like,
average annual value for those playing at home.
Correct. Like, what is the financial value of this deal for Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling? They're going to do tapings in June, and then this is to premiere in July. It's going to be called Mayhem. Because I know everyone was asking for more hours of wrestling television, but
what night is it airing on?
They have not announced that, and it's an interesting placement because I would think if I'm TSN, I would just put this right on after Dynamite. That would seem to be. Would that be the best place to put wrestling on?
Unless it's going to go on like in prime time somewhere else.
Yeah, I don't know.
Was that like out of the question that's like unimaginable that TSN would do that?
I can't see them happening. I mean, they do have a lot of sports commitments. Now the understanding is that this would be on linear TSN, not just digital. But again, like we know
not,
very
not,
little.
Not on the TSN app.
Yeah, I think that would certainly reduce expectations if this is just on the app. But no, they're promoting this as like this is a television deal that they have with TSN. So, you know, we will see where this ultimately ends up. And will there even be a way for, like, you would think that this would be distributed for people outside of Canada as well? Like, this is, I don't know how much interest there's going to be in more hours of wrestling for a fan that is already watching so many hours of wrestling. Is Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling enough that it's going to have that level of demand? But I think if it was, you know, it's going to be really hard, I think, just to carve out a bit of a niche for yourself. But they're trying with this Canadian branding, and at least with AEW, you're doing several live events per year to tape for television and probably do some marathon tapings, and you have some access to AEW talent.
Are they cooperating with, are they taping like in the same venue that the Ring of Honor tapings are happening at? Or did I imagine that?
Well, these last ones were at St. Clair College that Scott D'Amore has run many, many a time in Windsor. But no, because ROH is doing all their tapings now in Jacksonville.
Right. Okay.
And finally here, did you want to talk at all? Did you follow any of this story about Ruthless Pro Wrestling over the weekend?
I certainly followed Post Wrestling's coverage of it.
Yes. Yeah. You were a third party in involved in all of this. So I'm going to direct people to some of our stories at the site. But if you are not familiar with this story, there was a Ruthless Pro Wrestling event this past Saturday in Berwyn, Illinois. Ruthless Pro Wrestling is in the midst of a ownership transition. And one of them, one of the performers on the show, Mads Cruel, who you have seen in MLW in the past, there was some fan at this event and allegedly was, you know, creating a disturbance throughout the show, I think is fair to say. And then after the show, he goes up to Mads Cruel, and in various clips that have, the first clip that showed up was this fan just being attacked by all of these wrestlers. And the story that came out on Sunday was that this fan had tried, or did in fact, stab Mads Cruel. And what you were seeing in this video clip was the response that all these people were pummeling this guy. And then you had, so Cultaholic did a story on this. There were two wrestlers on the show that had stated it was a stabbing. And then there's an anonymous source in the story that said, like, there was no stabbing, and that it seems like this, that was just like a cover story. And then this other clip emerges where we see the fan engaging with Cruel. He's up talking to him, and then Cruel starts throwing punches, and they proceed towards another merchandise table. And I mean, there is no visible knife or stabbing. So a lot of this has just been trying to piece together of people that were there. Mickey Knuckles, who was on the show, had stated that there were cops there. So that naturally, I contacted the police department, and we have no confirmation.
This is in Berwyn, Illinois, just outside of Chicago.
Yes, which did take my freedom.
There's a good FOIA law in Illinois.
Well, I will say this. I sent my request. I let 2 days pass, and then I contacted them again, and they did get back to me, and they said that they are investigating this, and they will be sending me records within a timely period, hopefully within the next week. And
the Mads Cruel is fine.
He stated Cruel is fine. He did not elaborate about the stabbing. I have reached out to him to ask him some questions, but he has not responded yet. So Gregory Iron, who I learned has wrestled one person on this broadcast, and
yes,
apparently is a semi viewer of ours. So he did a podcast and recounted that, you know, he was there, and you can see him in this video at the merchandise table where they kind of crash into. And he was like, I saw no knife. He's like, I can't say 100% there wasn't, but not only was there, did he see nothing, he did not see a stabbing, but in the aftermath, nobody was talking about a knife. Nobody was talking about a stabbing. He went online Sunday and was like stunned by this news, and just like there was no sign of any type of like stabbing or anything like that. So this has been a very confusing story. I don't know if there were cops there. Certainly, if you saw this video, it's hard to imagine cops would have been at this. this brawl breaks out at the very least, and that there is no arrest made or anything like this. I mean, this is quite the scene where this guy is just getting pummeled by these wrestlers after the fact. And you know, it did sound like this guy was creating a disturbance throughout the show, may have been intoxicated as well. But yeah, it just seems to be a puzzling scene of this.
So this guy, with this video that you mentioned, and we're watching some of it now,
yes,
of this fan being beat up by everybody, and it seems like a lot of the locker room empties out and beats this guy up and, you know, escorts him out of the building,
yes,
punching him and all that. Is that fan okay? Was he hospitalized or anything?
I have not been able to contact.
Have you reached out to him for comment?
I have not reached out to him yet.
We don't know who he is, though.
I don't have his information, but it is someone I would like to reach out to as well. But that's all we know as of this point. But it's a very strange story.
I will say, like, that is the wrestling culture of what wrestlers are supposed to do. If a fan attacks a wrestler, like it's within the practice norms of the indie wrestling that I knew for everybody to come out and kick that guy's ass.
Yeah, I guess we're going off of these clips.
Not that I was ever a part of that.
Yeah, the Empire scene would never. But yeah, in that latest clip we have, I mean, the guy is like up to Cruel, and we don't know what he's saying to him, but then all of a sudden Cruel starts throwing these punches at him. And again, we're going off of what we can see there or what we cannot see. And what we cannot see is a knife or any kind of stabbing. But I mean, it still remains to be said. And Cruel has not confirmed or denied if he was stabbed. The promotion has not commented on what happened. So you're kind of left with, you know, trying to piece this together. And it's been people that have actually been in the building, some of which, and video that has emerged that you have to be cognizant of, that when these situations happen, often they're going to get caught on camera by people.
The only thing that comes to mind of an incident like this on a show that I was on is many years ago. It was an ESW show, and the two lead heels were doing an opening promo in the ring, and I think like this backyard wrestler or something just walked over the rails, got in the ring. It was like towards the end of the promo, got in the ring. The heels like knew this was not part of the show. And like one of them started to roll his arms up. Security didn't rush in. I don't know what the condition of security was at that point, and they basically powdered out away from this fan who then like posted on the bottom rope as the heels went away. These two wrestlers got to the back and were, believe it or not, really mad.
I'm shocked. Well, don't you miss the independent scene, Brandon?
Not really.
All right. Well, I think we are going to wrap up this show. We have we have gone lengthy here, but we thank everyone for joining us here on this Thursday evening. Before we go, anything you're working on, Brandon?
Well, of course there is very much that I'm working on. I was in negotiations this week. Not the first time to come to terms on a stipulation and proposed order for Vice Chancellor J. Travis Lasser to review and potentially approve. So I filed a second notice of challenge. Have we discussed that on this program before? I have filed a second notice of challenge following up on my earlier notice of challenge from December. Now I filed one on March 26th, which was this past Thursday. So we probably did not discuss it. Challenging, a lot of documents on this docket for the shareholder, the WWE merger shareholder lawsuit that we've often talked about. There are a lot of documents since my last challenge that are still under seal or are redacted. I've challenged many of them, and I've come to an agreement with the attorneys for the WWE D&O defendants, this director and officer defendants, and the Vince's attorneys and the plaintiff attorneys have all agreed that there are certain dates. Basically, one of the main takeaways is on April, I believe it's 13th. Is it April 13th? This coming two Mondays from now, some filings that have never been filed before as a public version will be filed. And then they have until April 20th, April 16th to file any motions to maintain confidential treatment. And then I will have until April 23rd, the following week, to oppose any motions if there are any. And we'll see how it all plays out. And they will have to, oh, by the way, this is important because they will file by the 16th to maintain confidentiality if they do over certain filings. Any filings that they do not motion to maintain confidentiality over in those motions are to be filed in unredacted form with some very careful exceptions. So next 2 weeks from now, by the end of the week, we should have more information pursuing the public interest.
Well, look forward to WrestleMania week. We will be all covered if all of this comes out. Probably a lot more on this next week. Hopefully.
Yes. Yes. We will have not even encompassing that information. We will have some new information, I expect, next week to discuss.
So keep it locked to WrestleNomics.com and PostWrestling.com, where you can catch all of our work. And Brandon and Jack Wannan have put up a great lengthy story on the Janelle Grant affidavit. That is up on the site now. And you can support WrestleNomics, Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. You can get all of the information about the Reddit sentiment analysis for 2025 involving WWE and AEW.
That's actually free, but we'll be doing for subscribers, there'll be an update on attendance, market to market comparisons. That should be coming up within the coming days, as these monthly reports that I do on the top, YouTube videos as well, and who's having the most matches. Probably some random Canadian wrestler from Alberta.
I hope so. It's that our favorite Canadian group, and of course Fuminori Abe as well.
Yeah.
I mean, we're gonna see how many numbers he stacks up. And yes. Finally, for this week's Rewind Away, it's already up for members at postwrestlingcafe.com. A look back at Spring Break 2 from Joey Janela and Game
Changer.
Yeah,
I think I
wrestling.
Was there. You guys were there too?
Huh. Had we met by 2018? 'Cause I don't think I met you before All In.
I don't think we met until All In.
Yeah, I think that's the first time we met.
That's when the business really started.
Yes, that was the first weekend I met David Bixenspan.
Well, how about that?
On that day. So we were all there at 4 a.m. as Great Sasuke belted out "It's My Life."
My only clear memory of that show is like Great Sasuke jumping off the top rope to the outside with a wheelbarrow over half of his body.
Yeah, that was quite the struggle for Great Sasuke and working inside of that trash can at 4 a.m. with Joey Janela. So if you want to check that out, I'll look back at a Spring Break 2 from 2018. That's it for us. We're here every Thursday night, 8:30 Eastern, and we'll speak with you next week.
When it's time to scale your business, it's time for Shopify. Get everything you need to grow the way you want, like all the way. Stack more sales with the best converting checkout on the planet. Track your cha-chings from every channel, right in one spot. And turn real-time reporting into big-time opportunities. Take your business to a whole new level. Switch to Shopify. Start your free trial today